Hello and welcome to Two Girls Who Read, a podcast. My name's Olivia.
And I'm Lily, and this is the podcast where we talk about anything and everything book related.
This week's topic is Woman Love Woman adaptations.
Yeah, like, it's gonna be a bit of, like, we're just gonna kind of, it's more like a, not like as much of like an organized episode. Well,
actually, it is.
It actually is quite organized, but like, it's more, I guess, like just like a discussion. Like, we're not just gonna be like giving recs. Like, we have some like Women Love Women recommendations. So, like, books, TV shows, movies, things like that.
May I please, because this is the first time where I'm more organized than you in the history of our podcast. So yes, she's sitting ahead here going that there's no order. But ladies and gentlemen, theys and thems, there actually is. It's just Lily doesn't have one, but I have one. So okay. Mm-hmm. Of course, the one about like woman love woman and like lesbians and sapphic women is the one. I have brought all my notes. I am ready.
Yes, she's ready.
I'm here to serve. So we're going to talk about, first, we're going to give some Woman Love Woman recs. Yeah. These can be shows, movies, or books, because we know how hard it is to find. So even though we are a bookish podcast, we will be keeping everyone fed and we will be going into all different realms of media, just because we know that you have to scour the earth to find them. Then we're going to be talking about how a lot of these Woman Love Woman recs that we're going to be wrecking get cancelled. And which of them get cancelled. And we're going to talk about what our thoughts are on the cancellations and why they keep getting cancelled. And then some other things that we might talk about are Woman Love Woman adaptations that we think missed the mark.
Yeah, like, because when we were, like, looking at this, like, we were kind of trying to talk about, like, things we wanted to talk about. And I was like, well, this one was Woman Love Woman, but I wouldn't recommend it necessarily. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I guess we kind of just went down the rabbit hole of, like, talking about, like, I guess, why some of these books, like, miss the mark. And also just how, like, these books are still considered to be very widely popular because they're some of, like, the only, or books or media or whatever.
Because
there's like, one of the only, there's not that much out there. So people take it and they're like, well, I still like it because it has that representation. But it just goes to show how underrepresented it is. But, yeah, like, bad pieces of media can still get by, like, that threshold, right?
100%. Like, I think so many people think that it's homophobic not to like a Woman Love Woman piece of media, or any, like, LGBTQ plus piece of media, especially if they're not a part of that community. So yeah, I'm glad that we're including this, though, because I think it's important, like, because if you want good representation, you have to call out the bad representation, right?
It's not even like that. I think some
it's
of
not
these,
even bad
rep. It's not representation. It's just a badly written novel, I feel
exactly.
Like, there's nothing wrong with the representation. I mean, maybe I'll think of somewhere there is, but the ones I'm thinking of off the top of my head, it's like, it's not necessarily bad representation. There's nothing wrong with that. But they're still not great books for lots of other reasons.
Yeah, but also, like, you have to, I feel like a great example of this, unfortunately, I have to use a gay love story here, like, a male love male, like, Heartstopper's really shown it perfectly. Like, Heartstopper's just taken off because it was a great show before it was like an MLM story, I felt like, and that's why it did so well. And since it's done so well, like, I really think we've seen the effects of how many MLM adaptations have just been bumped up onto the screen. Like, they've been taken off the waiting list since they saw, like, Heartstopper can do it. Like, I just know right now people are going, well, Heartstopper did well, so people like gay. And so it's important, I think, that when you're talking about Rex and you're talking about, like, Woman Love Woman stuff, that it's also important to be like, this isn't good, because then if everyone else is saying it's good, and then people who, like, aren't familiar with this type, you know, like, reading Woman Love Woman stuff, they'll read what's popular and they'll be like, this isn't good. And so then people, but it'll still be popular, so then it gets made into an adaptation, then nobody likes it, and then everyone's like, oh, we don't make Woman Love Woman adaptations. They don't do well. And it's just, like, not the case at all. Like, they're not doing well because everybody refuses to call out that it was just a bad book, like, or a bad show or movie or whatever.
So I have quite a bit to say about that. Yeah, I'm excited. That's where I'm organized, is I have my thoughts organized for that.
I'm very excited to hear Lily's thoughts on this, because we haven't really talked about it a lot. Yeah. We started to, and then we banked it for this podcast.
We're like, wait, stop. I'm going to go get my microphone. We're going to start recording.
People probably think that's just like all we do. We're like, wait, original thought incoming. Get the microphone out.
That's not normally what we do, I promise.
No. Then also, going further into that, we're going to go why we think they missed the mark. Also, what we're looking for in woman, like, because I think it's easy to sit here and go, me, 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 me. But we also need to talk about, like, what we want. Like, what, you know, the fact that we do have, like, standards, and there are things I think that need to be met in order for me personally, and Lily will probably have different things personally, to be considered a good, you know, love story or whatnot. And then also, we're just going to talk about how, like, we wish we had more recs to give you, I guess. So, let's get into it first with the rec. So I think before we obliterate everything, we're just going to get into things that we think did Woman Love Woman representation right, or things that we liked.
I'm probably just going to say mine quite quickly, I guess, because I'm going to, like, bring up, like, a lot of these as like examples, I guess, when I'm talking about what I look for in a Woman Love Woman book.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. So I don't want to talk too much about it.
Yeah,
because I'm gonna end up talking about it a lot later, if that makes sense.
Okay,
personally, that's how my brain is organizing this information. But do you want to go first, because I know you had quite a few to go off of?
Are we just going one at a time?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just gonna get the super, these I'm gonna get the ones that are super popular, and that when we've been talking about, oh, these recs are just super popular, but, like, you know, they're not actually good. I'm just going to put everyone's mind at ease by starting off with, like, one that is, it does have the hype, and I do think it also deserves the hype. Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. I think you could close your eyes and put and click on a random podcast, like, episode, and I'm probably raving about the Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo
all the time,
every day, all day. I just really loved how this talked about it not only represented one form of, like, woman love woman, I suppose, or, like, sapphic woman, I suppose, like, mm-hmm. And that's really something that's not treaded upon lightly in the book, which I love. And just being, like, a queer woman, it was so nice, like, to read about, like, characters talking about how they don't really know, you know, what they are. Because especially it's set in a time, for those of you who don't know, I feel like we all know the plot of Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, but in case you don't, it's a story where basically the, almost like Marilyn Monroe, I think of it as, like, that level of fame figure in this fictional, you know, modern day, she's kind of left the golden age or golden era of Hollywood, and she was just the it girl of her time in the 50s or whatever, and essentially she never gave a single interview. Nobody ever knows kind of what went behind the scenes in her career, but people were so fascinated by her, so obviously her story is worth just millions of dollars, and it's a once in a lifetime editorial story, pretty much. And also Evelyn Hugo was notorious, as the title implies, for having seven husbands. And, you know, why did she have so many marriages? What was the go with that? People want to know. Anyway, one day Evelyn Hugo comes out of nowhere, and she goes up to this writer called Monique, who's a struggling journalist in New York, and says, I want you to write my biography. I want you and nobody else to write it. And the story is kind of Monique, while Evelyn Hugo is recounting her life, essentially, Monique is also trying to figure out why Evelyn Hugo, like, only wants her to write her biography. And amongst the way, there is just, like, queer representation, and it's just really, really good. And I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good one to get out of the way first, because, like, I think obviously a lot of people already know about it, but I think it's good to get out of the way, that for people to know that's not going to be one of the ones we're going to bitch about at the end.
In fact, we'll probably rave a bit about it later, because it's, for me, it had, like, what I was looking for, you know.
And actually, there's some things that in my little thing that I'm probably going to talk about with that book, like, because there is criticisms about the book.
Yeah.
That I want to address, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
We'll see.
Okay, so I want to recommend, this is like a standalone fantasy book, and I feel like I don't really see a lot of standalone fantasies, or not standalone fantasies, but like fantasies with like the, like, a sapphic main character. So that's why I'm recommending like Girl Serpent Thorn. I actually really did like that book. My only main complaint about that book was honestly that I wish that she had made it into a series rather than a standalone, because I really wish that there was, like, more. I was like, that could have been expanded on, that could have been expanded on, that could have been expanded on. So it's like, that is the only thing about it, but it was still in the end, like, a very, like, fun story, I guess. And the two characters that, you know, get together, like, I thought that their dynamic was, like, really cool and fun. But just a little blurb about it. So there, it is about the main girl. I'm referencing Goodreads as well right now, because it's been like a year and a half since I've read this.
Yeah.
So I do remember it, but like, I don't know how to explain it without like spoiling it. I guess. But basically there's a girl who is like cursed, and if you like touch her, she's like poisonous, like it'll kill you. Wow, bit of a shatter me. Yeah. But it's like different, it's like the person gets like slowly like poisoned to death or whatever, which is like kind of interesting.
Oh, it's kind of like poison ivy, like,
yeah.
Lol.
And so yeah, so basically she is like isolated from like her family, from everyone, like it's not that great. And then basically, so she lives in like this castle. She, like, her family's like royalty, and she's a princess, but she doesn't really get to like live the royal life, because like she can't see anyone, she can't meet any people, she can't be near her family.
Mm-hmm.
So like she has her own little part of the castle, and she kind of decides to like venture out through the castle one time. And in like the dungeons, there is this person who is being captured because they think that she's like a demon or whatever. So they're trying to keep her there for like questioning. And they end up meeting and talking quite a bit, and she gets to learn a little bit more about...
And history called them best friends.
And history called them best friends. Anyway, that's just, like, the basic
premise. That's a cool premise.
It is a cool premise. It's, like, a cool little fantasy book. It's pretty short, so, like, if you want, like, something to read in, like, a day or two, like, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got really into it, I remember, so.
Yeah, I remember you liked that, too.
I did like it, yeah.
Okay, my next rec that I have is actually a movie. And I kid you not, I just finished this movie like,
she did,
like 20 minutes ago,
literally.
No, I'm not even kidding. I finished this movie, and then Lily and I were like, we should record a podcast episode. So unexpectedly, you know, I'm glad I watched this movie before I did this, because
yeah.
It came out today, I'm pretty sure, but it's the new Camila Mendes Maya Hawke movie called Do Revenge. And I didn't really know what to expect from this movie. I think it's, I was watching the trailers as it was coming out. And I think especially with like teen movies, Netflix has just like had a notorious streak for flops. Let's be real. Recently. And so I remember watching the trailer for this movie called Do Revenge, because I had, you know, if you see Maya Hawke in something, you're like, sapphic woman, like, question mark. And so I was doing a solid, and I was like making sure that they hadn't, like, the straights hadn't got to Maya Hawke. And so I was like, no. And so then I watched it though, and the trailer actually really intrigued me. It was one of those rare instances, I feel like it's so hard these days to find a trailer that just doesn't spoil the whole entire plot of the entire movie.
Yeah.
But it didn't do that, and it just made me really curious. And so yeah, I was like kind of keeping up with it, and then I saw it come on my recommended immediate like play, and then it had me entertained from start to finish. I was gasping, I was laughing out loud. It very much gives like Clueless meets like Jessica's Body meets Cruel Intentions. Which I just love that vibe of movie. Just a very classic, just badass women. I love just watching films about complex characters, and especially when they're teens, I feel like so often writers will underestimate like how complex a teenage girl character can be. But it was just one of those films I was watching, and I was like, this was definitely written by a woman, and there's some sapphic love in it, and it's really good. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the next one I want to talk about, I read this one this year and I really enjoyed it. It is called Last Night at the Telegraph Club. I think I've recommended it on the podcast before.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I can't keep up.
But I did really like this book. Basically, the premise is it takes place in like Chinatown in San Francisco during like the era of time or whatever, during the, I think probably like the 60s, 1950s or 60s, the time during the Cold War where everyone like hated anyone that they thought like might be a communist, which a lot of people who like weren't quote unquote like looked like your average American, like they're like, oh, a communist, I see, you know? And so it was a very like scary time to be not like basically like a straight white male. Extra scary time to be not a straight white male. So but when the main character gets, you know, she meets this friend at school who takes her to this place called the Telegraph Club, which she basically discovers is like a lesbian bar, which is pretty wild because all these at this time had to be like very hidden, like they were like illegal, like couldn't have that, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a very, very cool story about just like her, like, you know, like I guess like her journey of like progression as she, when she like starts going versus like, and then all the things that like happened to her, I guess, as like a result of like her experiences at the Telegraph Club or whatever. I don't really know how to say anything else without spoiling it, because I would start spoiling it if I literally said anything else.
Which that was me with Do Revenge just then. Just watch it.
Like, she goes to a bar quite a few times.
And there's lesbians.
That's all I can tell you really about it, unless I'm going to spoil it. So.
I love that kind of vibe of just, like, club. Like, especially... especially like as a woman, I love the club vibe and the club scene. I genuinely think I would be a club girl if it wasn't for the fact I was a woman and like men exist.
Yeah,
because every time I go to like pubs or clubs or whatever, I'm like, this would be like, I'm actually having a vibing time, but like the only thing is I just feel out of place. Like, I'm not, this isn't my scene, but it is my scene. It's just kind of like the masculinity in it, you know what I mean? So I love that idea of just like lesbians. let's go.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
Okay. I feel like you're really gonna deliver on the book rec, and I'm gonna deliver on the show and movie rec, so I'm gonna keep going with that. My next show rec is called It's Okay Not to Be Okay. This was a show that came out, God, when did this come out? Wasn't 2020. Don't tell me I'm that old. Did it come out in like 2018? It does not feel like that. Hold on. I gotta look this up.
Okay.
Give me a sec. It's okay not... Oh, no, not It's Okay Not to Be Okay. Fuck, what was it called? Oh, I'm Not Okay With This. That's what it's called.
Oh, I know that one. Yeah.
Okay. It's Okay Not to Be Okay is a K-drama. I'm sorry. I'm not okay with... I am not okay with this. When did this come out? 2020. Okay, great. I'm not that old. Okay. So it came out in 2020, like start of 2020, because like, I remember it was not COVID time at all when that came out. It was like before that. But it stars Sophia Lillis and Wyatt Olive, who were in the It movie. And it's made by the same people who made Stranger Things. So Sean Levy. So Sean Levy is actually like a really big name. He made Stranger Things. He made he's in the All Too Well 10-minute version, which is so funny. He's a dad. And he made, his most recent work is The Adam Project with Ryan Reynolds, and then Wyatt, who's gonna play Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
And then what's the other one he made? And he made the Shadow and Bone show. So he's actually a really good asset to Netflix, I would say. Like, whenever I see he's made something for Netflix, I'm like, oh, this is cool.
It'll probably be pretty good.
Yeah, like, he's a really good... He produces really good stuff. And, you know, I haven't heard anyone say they have crazy issues with him yet, so...
So far,
you never know with old white men in Hollywood, like, yeah. But anyways, yeah, so it basically follows the story of... Sydney, Novak, and basically, first of all, the vibes in the show, chef's kiss, immaculate. It's just small town, dirty, gritty. I love it, personally. Very indie kind of film vibe. Mm. And basically, Sydney struggles with, like, anger. She's very... She gets angry, I'll just say. And then, anyway, one day she discovers that basically she has almost, like, telekinetic powers, if my memory serves correctly. And the episodes are really short. They're, like, 20 minutes. And I just remember watching it, and since the episodes are 20 minutes, you get so much in those 20 minutes, though. Like, yeah, the same amount you would get in 40 minutes of television for a lot of stuff these days, just condensed into 20 minutes, which was so great, because I remember I finished it all in one afternoon, and yeah, just there wasn't a single moment where I wasn't entertained. All the characters are so fleshed out so well. The special effects are great, the direction's great, the cinematography's great, and the actors just, like, act as if, like, their rent is due, because it probably is. And if that's not enough to convince you, there is a Savage Love, and then also Stanley, very much Stiles Stilinski from Teen Wolf energy. So if you're a Stiles Stilinski ho like me, you will love Stanley from I Am Not Okay With This, like, just chef's kiss. So
our listeners can probably hear, like, the little party that's going on the street outside our place. Oh, sorry about that.
We've got some ambiance, some city life ambiance. They can head bop with the people. Yeah. They just say nothing, so we're just like,
yeah, that's really awkward if you don't hear anything, but if you don't, that's good.
That's good. We have good mics.
But if you do, I'm sorry. Okay, my next rec, also a book, because that's what I'm delivering on here, I guess.
Yeah, that's your purpose, on a bookish podcast.
Yeah. So, this one is called Perfect on Paper. I also read this year. Mm. It's not a lesbian book, the main character is bi, but there is, like, a woman-love-woman component, like, in the story that's, like, quite big, so I think it counts.
You can.
Anyway. Yeah. So basically the premise of the book is it's basically like just like the ultimate like bisexual love triangle, I guess, between like they got like the main girl and then it's like there's a girl and then also a guy. So it's a great little love triangle that's like going on here. And I don't even really know how to explain it. It's just a really cute like I feel like with some of these, like, the plot is just, like, really thick. It's, like, I'm recommending, like, a fantasy or whatever. But this is just, like, a very cute, like, rom-com, I feel like. Like, I feel like I listened to it on an audiobook while I was driving, I remember. And it was just such a cute little fun read. Obviously, like, it tackled a lot of, like, really big issues as well. But basically, this girl is, like, in love with her best friend. Who, she's like, oh, she definitely doesn't like me back. And she has this secret thing that she, like, runs at her school where she kind of gives, like, relationship advice or whatever. Like, she has, like, this locker that she know like, doesn't get, like, put in rotation or whatever. I think her mom, like, worked at the school, so she, like, took it off the, like, locker records or whatever so mm-hmm. she could have this, like, locker to herself. And people could, like, put in, like, anonymous letters, like, asking for, like, relationship advice.
Mm-hmm.
So she was, like, the school's, like, relationship, like, guru, I guess. Like, yeah. She was saving all these relationships, and then they didn't like they put like a little bit of money into the envelope, and then she would like give them an email back with advice or whatever.
Yeah.
And no one like knew who it was, but then one day like this like guy comes up to her. He like sees her like after school like going through the locker and basically finds out that it's her, and he's like, I won't tell anyone, but I need your advice. Like, I need you to help me. Like, I'll pay you. Like, I need your help to get, like, my girlfriend back or whatever. Like, she dumped me, and I basically need your help. So then they end up working together on that. So she's got quite a few little crises going. But it's a cute book, and I like it. So.
Cute. Well, that going off of that, I have, like, a movie rec with similar plot, like, vibes to that. Yeah. So it's called The Half of It, another 2020 film. I was banging on the closet in 2020. I was just like, I'm in it!
I was going to say, I was like, what was going on in 2020?
The pandemic made us all reflect on things, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so Can we turn on a light in here? I'm so sorry to people listening because we know that you can't exactly see the lights right now, but it's getting dark in here. We have no light source. Okay. We're just looking like vampires in here for no reason. And nobody was addressing it. Thank you. Yeah. So basically the premise of the half of it is a shy, straight A Chinese American student helps the school jock woo a girl whom secretly they both desire. So essentially, yeah, so basically there's this jock and he likes this girl and she's like the popular girl in school, and then obviously we have the shy straight A student and she's known for like writing people's essays for money, and I'm like, get that bank girl, good for you. But also she's pining after this popular girl too. They've gone to like the same church together, and yeah, they just like really the tension is there, you can tell. But you can tell that Miss Thang, like Miss Popular, is like, you're so, like, I'm so straight, what are you talking about? And so anyway, this guy, the jock, comes up to the shy straight A girl and is like, hey, I need you, instead of writing an essay, like, can you ghostwrite for me, basically love letters to this girl, like. And anyway, they become very personal, pleasure and business mix very quickly, and it's just a classic case of, it kind of gives, it kind of gives, like, She's the Man vibes, a little bit, just, and She's the Man is based off of a play, a Shakespeare play. What Shakespeare play is it based off of?
I have no idea.
Might be Othello. Yeah, it just gives that classic vibe of someone's falling, a woman falls for a guy, but actually, like, she's like, wait, did I like the guy or like the woman who was making the guy look good? Something any of us like female readers who are like, I only love men written by women, yeah, will go through. Just yeah,
always a questionable statement.
Yeah, literally. So 12th Night, sorry, that's the Shakespeare play She's the Man is based off, and gives very similar vibes to what the half of it is, kind of. So yeah, it's just a really good film. I remember the first time I watched it, I was a bit younger, so I didn't really get it at first, like, because back then I still was like, what needed the glitz and the glam and like this crazy epic love story. But now that I look back on it, it's just like a really good film, yeah, with just good representation. Yeah.
I'm probably going to save the rest of the books I wanted to talk about for like when I talk about the rest, so that we have time to talk about the rest. But if you have any last minute ones you want to say before we move on, you can just say them.
My last one I'll say is Everything Everywhere All of the Time. This is the plot of, I don't even know how to explain the plot of Everything Everywhere All the Time. Everything Everywhere All the Time, all at once, sorry, not all of the time. So I'll just literally read what the plot is. But a Chinese immigrant gets unwillingly embroiled in an epic adventure where she must connect different versions of herself in the parallel universe to stop someone who intends to harm the multiverse. So I know what you're thinking, what in the off-brand Doctor Strange is this? But no, Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, or Wishes, it was Everything Everywhere All at Once. Out of all of the A24 works that have been published, like, or like made to date, or A24 productions, it's a pretty popular opinion online that this is like A24's best production to date, and that's saying a lot because A24 has high quality work. So it's a sci-fi movie, and it's, yeah, it's got some of that queer, just Asian American representation, which is really good. So just the half of it, but like, yeah, you know, it's nice to see that. I wish I could say I had a rec for some queer, like, oh, actually I do, sorry, I'm gonna, last one, then to include some South Asian queer representation, and then also I'm trying to think, I think it's African American, Never Have I Ever, specifically season 3, has some woman love woman representation, which Lily watched me like scream, yeah, over. It was just like so good because I wasn't expecting it. I will say it wasn't the best. I I probably end up talking about it in a few minutes. But yeah, it was there, and sometimes that's all you can ask for. So yeah. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, so what's next?
Okay, so next we're gonna talk about some shows that got cancelled, so, and why we think they keep getting cancelled.
I think what really prompted this episode's idea was because you came up with this idea a while ago, but it was, well, I don't know if this is what prompted it, but it was right around the time that, like, First Kill got cancelled off of Netflix.
Yes.
Which, if you don't know, First Kill was a Netflix show about lesbian vampires, basically.
It was a show. Did you ever watch any of First Kill? I did. Okay. So, yeah. Literally the premise of First Kill, it was based off of a V.E. Schwab short story.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be a Romeo and Juliet retelling, and it was. where basically Juliet is a vampire, and I forget what the other girl's name is a vampire hunter. And yeah, they were just a woman, you know, they were just a little bit spicy.
Like, I've seen scenes from it, but I didn't get around to watching it. And then they recently canceled it. And I think that really just, like, started a lot of a conversation around, like, why all these are getting canceled. Because, I mean, you can argue that, like, people were complaining about the show. They're like, it wasn't as good, I think, as people thought it was going to be or whatever. Which I think is also why I didn't watch it, because some people were, like, saying it wasn't the greatest or whatever. But I think also, like, a lot of people were watching it because I think it was a very, like, I guess, like, you know, like, we all watch shows that, like, aren't the best, but they're just, like, great entertainment. You know what I mean? So, like, a lot of people were watching it. And so, like, I remember it was when I saw someone had, like, some stats up for it, and it, like, way outperformed, like, Heartstopper, and Heartstopper did very well when it came out, and Heartstopper got renewed for season 2 and 3, and I'm not saying Heartstopper didn't deserve to get renewed for season 2 and 3, like, it very much did.
No, we're not, like, pitting things against each other, but it's the best comparison we can find.
Right, because it shows that, like, because they're both LGBTQ-centered stories.
Came out same time.
Came out around the same time. Kind of had, you know, like, I don't know, like, and First Kill actually way outperformed Heartstopper. Got a lot more.
It got, like, triple the views.
Triple the streams that Heartstopper did. And whereas Heartstopper got renewed, First Kill got canceled. And so,
and the only difference is one of them was men and the other one was women.
So I think that, obviously, I want to bring that up because I think that was very
shows
what, inspiration it show, for yeah, this episode.
Shows where the priorities lie.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's just a very good example. Obviously, there's been tons of women love women shows that have gotten cancelled, but I do think that this was one of the more recent ones, and I don't think it's ever been, like, more obvious as one, like, because, like we said, it came out around the same time as Heartstopper, and it got canceled around the time that got renewed. And so it just really showed that it was a very easy contrast, right?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Here's my thoughts on it. I couldn't get through the first episode of First Kill. Yeah. So it seemed like it was unsure of what it was doing. It was, like, this cheesy, like, Twilight wannabe. Like, even the editing style, it had like, the time lapses that it had in Twilight Breaking Dawn. But you could tell they didn't have, like, the budget to make it work like it did in Breaking Dawn. So it just made no sense that it was there. That they had, like, the weird, edgy, like, kind of, like, indie rock music playing in the background or whatever. One thing I will say, however, is the chemistry was there. The only thing that kept me going in the first episode, I was like, these two have good chemistry. And I really liked as well that, like, a black family got to not only be represented as, one, in a woman love woman relationship, but two, as, like, vampire hunters. Because I feel like you don't see that. I can't, there have been so many vampire shows, and black families are never at, like, the center of it. They're not, like, the main people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not, like, main characters.
No, like, the only one I can think of is, like, in The Vampire Diaries, there was Bonnie Bennett. But we all, like, if anyone's a fan of The Vampire Diaries, we know what went on behind the scenes, and they really were not supportive of a black woman being this really amazing character. You know, it was really the actress that did that all on her own. Like, and yeah. So, yeah, it might have been cheesy television, but I think
you know how many heterosexual.
Exactly, I was about to say.
And I'm like, this is horribly edited. This is the acting is god awful.
Yeah, like exactly. Here's the thing about the cancellation, though. It's like, yeah, it was cheesy. It was bad, but it's like, why aren't women? Why aren't lesbians allowed to have like cheesy bad television? You know what I mean?
I know so many people, like I know a lot of people who watched it actually.
Yeah, same.
And they would like telling me, they're like, oh, it's like so bad, but it's so good. Like I just gotta watch it. Like, you know what I mean?
You know what I think the most recent heterosexual version of that is? The Summer I Turned Pretty. Yeah. Like The Summer I Turned Pretty came out and people are gonna come for us and they'll be like, no, The Summer I Turned Pretty was cinematic masterpiece. It was good. The soundtrack phenomenal. I'm like,
no, The Summer I Turned Pretty was incredibly
cringy. Is The Summer I Turned Pretty gonna get an Emmy? Like, is it Emmy award winning worthy? And you're gonna go, well, no, but that's not what it's meant to be. And I'm like, well, neither is First Kill.
It's meant to be entertaining.
Exactly. And
I think for a lot of people, it definitely was entertaining. So
it definitely did keep people entertained. It got triple the views of Heartstopper. That's like, I think it got like 600 million streams in like its first couple months being on the platform. And yeah. It's just ridiculous because Netflix is always all about like, I've had so many of my favorite shows be canceled by Netflix, and every single reasoning for why they've canceled their shows always come back to it didn't get enough streams. But it's getting to the point where I'm like, fuck off. Like, it isn't about that, because
no.
Another example is like Julian the Phantoms, you know what I mean?
Got a lot of streams, yeah.
Got so many streams. Like, so many streams. The proof is in like the way that if you look up Julian the Phantom songs on YouTube, they have like 40 to 100 million views on YouTube. And I'm like, if this is how much like the YouTube clip has, how many streams does the actual clip have, like from the show? And like the TikTok hashtag has over like a billion views. And I'm like, you're telling me that this didn't get enough streams for you, but the Netflix is like, it didn't get enough. But then you have like, and so the same goes for First Kill as well. And Julian the Phantoms also had like Alex, which was a queer man, like, who, so there's that too. And yeah, it's just like, there's this weird idea that unless like queer relationships or sapphic love is being presented in a way that is also artistic, something seen as an artistic choice, it isn't worthy of being on a screen. And I'm like, being queer isn't an artistic choice. Like, it's not something like, or like choosing to love someone of the same sex isn't something you choose to do at all. So it's really painful watching these massive platforms pick and choose, you know, what versions or what type of quote unquote good or entertaining content is allowed to be shown on the platform that involves you know, same-sex relationships. It's like only this form of media is considered good.
Yeah. And I've been looking, like, I just like pulled up a few articles right now because I've read some of these articles before and I wanted to like pull them back up because perfect opportunity to talk about it. But there's this one article that came out, this was after First Kill got canceled, but it was basically talking about like how Netflix has a serious issue with like canceling lesbian shows.
It doesn't have a single one that it's renewed.
Yeah, like it gives like a list or whatever of a bunch of these shows that got canceled. So like I'm Not Okay With This, Everything Sucks, Sense 8, Atypical, and One Day at a Time were just shows that were all canceled not that long ago that all had like lesbian main characters.
I watched One Day at a Time. That had a few seasons. And that did, yeah. That actually did get one more season after, like, one of the main characters came out as, I think she came out as lesbian. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And then also Atypical has a lot of seasons, but they all got cancelled very abruptly.
Yeah, that's the thing that, like, obviously, like, I'm just, like, reading off of this, like, article. Like, there's so much more to the article. I just wanted to, like,
yeah.
I'm just trying to save time here. But, yeah, like, I know that some of those shows had, like, more than one season or whatever, which is, like, obviously good or whatever. And that's not to say that, like, there's, like, not any shows with, like, lesbian representation on it. But what I'm saying is like, there's so many straight centered shows that have like, which freaking season is Grey's Anatomy on? Like, so many of these shows.
What season
have,
is
like,
Grey's Anatomy on? What season is Riverdale on? What season yeah. is, you know, like, the list goes on and on of shows.
Like, there's so many shows. It's like, okay, people will be like, yeah, but that one had like two or three seasons though. And I was like, yeah, but like, so many shows these days have like 10 seasons. Like, it's.
Yeah, ridiculous. Here's what it is. Name me a single show that has homosexual representation that is the main focus of the show. So mm-hmm. I'm not talking about like your token side couple character who's yeah. like bi, unconfirmed, like name me one where it's like the main character is part of the LGBTQ plus community, where there has been a unanimous opinion that it has run past its expiration date. Like, it has had that phrase used on it where it's like, it ran yeah. past its expiration date.
Because there's so many, like, heterosexual yeah. shows that I'm like, this has gone on for too long.
It's past its expiration date. Like,
yeah, and so, but I feel like even if these shows, like the ones you said, like, well, that one did have a few seasons, like, like, for example, like, I haven't seen Atypical. I've seen parts of it, but I haven't, like, actually watched all of it. But I know a lot of people who watch that very regularly. And, for example, when, like, yes, that one did have, like, a few seasons or whatever, but when that ended, there's some people that were, like, no one was being, like, oh, you know, it is about time. Like, everyone exactly. was, like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's, like, yeah. There hasn't been a single homosexual like focused show that's been able to run its course.
Yeah,
like, it's always been shut down, like, before it starts one, to bloom.
I just want to see one get bad, you know what I mean? Like, you it goes I mean? On so long it gets bad.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Like, I want to be able to be like,
equality.
Yeah, I want to be like, you know what, you guys, you're running out of ideas.
Exactly. You guys have been given too much money and too much time that you have run out of ideas officially.
Yeah, I just want to say that about a lesbian show. Is it too much to ask for? Like, I don't want it to get cancelled.
Exactly. Right,
when it's in the middle of being good.
Yeah, like, exactly.
So.
And then the ones that don't get cancelled, you know, this is something to mention. The ones that don't get cancelled and do get their quote-unquote proper ending always end with the main woman-love-woman couple. Either one of them dies or one of them marries a man.
Yeah, they like break up or something.
They break up because it's just, loving a woman's just too complicated. We can't do this. Like, this was never actually gonna work. You know that, right? Like,
it's like
yeah.
how Netflix always does the movies about, like, the, like, Muslim girl or whatever. But then, like, she takes off her hijab for a man or something.
Yeah.
It's like, Netflix always pulls stuff like that. And they do it, like, with this as well.
Yeah.
It's just, they're ridiculous with their representation.
Well, it's such a question of like, who do you blame, right? Because obviously there's a network issue happening, because this is happening consistently throughout the network. So obviously you're like, there's obviously like an impression left upon the different individual projects if you're under like Netflix or whatever, that you're like, oh, we have this is what you do. But then it's also like, who is it? Is it the people that are getting given the money to like make the show as well that might be at fault, you know, are the people who are writing these? It's just so hard. Like, do you blame the people writing the scripts or do you blame the people directing it? Like, where does it go wrong? You know what I mean? It's just yeah. so hard to pinpoint, but it keeps happening. And there's just no clarity on like where exactly it's going wrong, but it needs to stop because it's so unfair and it's so just unequal. And it's just so shit. Like, yeah.
So, I guess is that a good segue into being like, where do women love women adaptations yeah. and novel and media go wrong?
Exactly. Let's get into it.
I have actually read quite a few books this year that are, and this year and last year that are women love women books, whether it's like a lesbian mm-hmm. book, or like characters are bisexual, like a whole many variations of this idea, right? Yeah,
a point to be made is that we wish we could give you a full episode.
I wish that we didn't have to be like, let's talk about a few things in this episode, because...
Yeah, we want to just be able to give you a full episode that a woman love woman wrecks, but quite frankly, we cannot do that.
And I really should be able to with the amount that I've read this year mm-hmm. and last year. I've read so many. But kind of as we were like talking, like giving wrecks, I was kind of like scrolling through my Goodreads or whatever, looking at the ones that I've read. And I was like, oh, that fits the category, that fits the criteria. But I didn't want to say it because I'm like, would I necessarily recommend it? I don't know. And then even the ones that I did recommend, like, to, like, today, I don't think any of them was actually, like, a 5 stars, even though I really liked them. Like, the ones, like, some of the best Woman Love Women books that I've read have been, like, a 4-star read. And that's, like, the best I've seen. And... I'm not, like, uber picky with my ratings either. Like, I
read the ones that you said or the ones that I said as well? The ones that
I said.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, I guess except Evelyn Hugo, which you said, like, I did rate that one 5 stars.
I was going to say, like, yeah. Evelyn Hugo, I did rate that 5 stars.
Yeah, I did as well. You, yeah. But, like, the other books I said, like, I rated them at 4 stars and then a bunch of them even lower than that. And I think that there's so many issues that stems from the fact that, like, when you have, like, I think the main... issue when it comes to Woman Love Woman books is it's treated as if it's like its own trope, I guess. Like, oh, they're lesbian, that's its own trope.
Yeah, it's like, back to that thing of like, it's an artistic choice. Like,
yeah, not even that, but like, you know, like when you there's like a heterosexual book, for example, people will tell you like, oh, this is enemies to lovers, forced proximity, like like, I'm trying to think of other tropes, like the one bed trope, the, yeah, you know, like...
It gets so specific, like, with heterosexual couples.
It's so specific.
It's like masked ballroom dancing and you've been sent to kill the other, like, it's so yeah, specific. Yeah, it's like
royals at a ball, secret spies in a gang, sent to kill them, but turns out they're actually in an arranged marriage, so they have to sleep in the same bed. It's always, like, every trope, and... But I feel like when people are describing, like, a romance book or, like, a fantasy or anything like that, they're describing the couple and it's, like, a lesbian couple. It's always like, oh, like, what are the tropes? Lesbian. I'm like, that's not a trope. Like, lesbian isn't a trope.
It's not a fun quirk, you know what I mean? Like when when I introduce myself, I don't go, hi, I'm Olivia, lesbian.
Well, and it's also, like, imagine if you, like, I don't know, like, just for example, like, I'm, like, recommending you a book. You're like, Lily, what is, like, the love hypothesis about? I'm like, straight. Like, they're straight. Yeah, hetero, like,
get this. So we have one bed trope, like, dagger on the thigh. Heterosexual.
Heterosexual. Like, you don't do that. So to me, it's very weird when I see books being recommended under the trope. They'd be like, guys, it has all the tropes we love. Lesbian. Yeah, like,
woman love women. Yeah.
Like, so it's just very weird. I feel like, and then I feel like it's such a thing where, like, the authors, like, play into it a bit. They're like, oh, all it has to be is they have to be lesbians. There's nothing else that it has to be. There's nothing else I have to do except make them lesbians. Like, you know what I mean? And then
the whole story becomes about how traumatic it is to come out. And it's just like, how is this meant to be, like, something that young people read and then feel confident in their skin if they identify with these characters? You know what I mean?
And I mean, there's been a lot of books that I've read that I'm like, well, obviously it's not going to be easy for them to come out. And I think last night at the Telegraph Club was a very, like, good example of that, because it was like the 50s or something. Obviously coming out as a lesbian would have been hard, and if they had just pretended it was like a really easy breezy thing, I would have been like, okay, really, that's a bit much. But I don't want every single book to be like that, like, oh, I can't come out, like, it's I can't, it's too hard to come out, you know what I mean? Like, maybe sometimes I just want a book where the two characters can be lesbians and be happy about it. Yeah, you know what
and
I mean?
We can just, you know, they can come out. Well, that's what Heartstopper was.
It's exactly what Heartstopper was. It's exactly what Heartstopper was. And that's why it did well. Like, that's why it did so well. And it's not to say that these characters can't have any hardship or anything, like, because the Heartstopper characters had plenty of hardship. It just didn't really have to do with the fact that, like, they were together. Like, they didn't act like it was, like, the biggest burden on the planet that they were, like, together.
No, it wasn't, like, yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like, so, you want to talk about tropes in fucking LGBTQ plus books, a trope is acting like the biggest trouble or burden in their life is having a relationship with someone of the same sex. That is a trope in that, in these types of books, of like, it's just like that the hardship that they have to overcome is like the fact that being with the person they love is just the most difficult part of their life. And I'm like, but it's not, like, it shouldn't, you know, that's not the impact that I think these authors should intend to have.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so even, yeah. And I guess like another thing for me where so much of this like goes so wrong is just that, the romance in lesbian books, like, they act like if the two characters like kiss one time, that's like,
that's all, like, you that's need.
So much romance. Whereas, like, which I'm not saying that every single book has to like have like an intense amount of romance scenes. Like, if there's so much else going on, like, I don't need the characters making out every chapter. But, you know, I'm getting a bit sick of reading books about like straight couples where like they have to like freaking fuck over a desk with like a gun to the head or something because of how dramatic these scenes are. And people will
still read it and go, and people meh, will be, they'll go, like, not enough spice.
Not enough spice. So we'll get that. But then, like, there'll be like a lesbian book and they'll like kiss once. Hold hands.
Not even kiss once. They'll just be close.